When you have the analytic training, the analytic attitude is internalized. And you need, of course, you need to feed the analytic attitude, and you need to keep it, and you have to be aware when you lose it, because you will have a sign from your countertransference. But I think that this is the motivation and the passion for psychoanalysis.
Welcome to the IPA podcast. For those of you who have been listeners to the past 40 episodes of this podcast series, you know that we've been focusing on analysts who bring their clinical skills to venues outside of the consulting room, hence the name psychoanalysis on and off the couch. Given that we are all facing together a crisis of unfathomable proportions, we're going to be changing the focus of our podcast. We are going to be interviewing psychoanalysts from all corners of the globe to discuss with them how their local communities are coping with this situation, how their clinical work has been affected by this situation, and also how the internal worlds of both the analyst and the patient have been impacted by this virus, as it impacts both our real fears and our imaginary fears. We're going to encounter not only uncertainty and fear, but we're also going to learn great wisdom, gifted empathy, and hope. We'll be maintaining the title of this podcast, both as a testament to our past work and as a placeholder for our future work. I hope you find these conversations both informative and sustaining. Feel free to write comments on our webpage, IPAoffthecouch.org. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Dr. Virginia Unger. Dr. Unger is a training analyst at the Buenos Aires Psychoanalytic Association, and she lives and practices in Buenos Aires. Dr. Unger specializes in child and adolescent analysis, was the former chair of the IPA's Child and Adolescent Psychoanalysis Committee and of the Committee for Integrated Training. In 2016, she was awarded the Platinum Konex Award for Psychoanalysis. She currently serves as the president of the International Psychoanalytic Association. As you will hear in our conversation, Virginia and I have met before in this venue. She and I began this podcast series last year, inaugurating the notion of interviewing analysts around the world who are bringing their psychoanalytic skills to venues apart from the consulting room. And it was a remarkable series of interviews with fascinating people doing really special work. But of course, we're now focused on changes to psychoanalysis apart from that. We're talking about what it's like for psychoanalysis to have moved from an in-person experience to an online experience. You will hear Virginia describe her personal experience of these changes, her clinical work, and most importantly, her leadership role for helping hold together the international psychoanalytic community as we weather this most difficult time. Here's my interview with Dr. Virginia Unger. Virginia, welcome to the podcast, or better said, welcome back to the podcast. It's really a pleasure to have you back on again. You and I, of course, had the inaugural conversation of this podcast series. The series was, and hopefully will be soon, back to the focus on psychoanalysis applied on and off the couch. One of the pillars of your presidency is to apply psychoanalysis in the community. And for the first 40 episodes of this podcast, I've had the pleasure of meeting analysts around the world who are doing really remarkable work applying their psychoanalytic skills to all kinds of creative venues. But here we are, a different year, in a time we could never imagine, faced with a similar question, about applying psychoanalysis in a different medium, in the online medium. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but first I want to start by checking in with you. You and your family are all well?
Yes, thank you, Harvey. Thank you for inviting me to come back to the podcast series. It's a pleasure, even though talking about pleasure is not timely, but it's a pleasure to be able to have a conversation about what's happening now. And thank you again for inviting me to be part of this successful series of podcasts that you created.
It's been a real pleasure for me. Thank you. What's happening in Buenos Aires?
In Buenos Aires, we are, on Thursday, we will be, let me start by telling something about my personal experience, and I think that this will be shared by many of the people who listen to the podcasts. There is the sense of time, in a way we keep it, but in another way we lose it, because we will, we are going through our third week of mandatory lockdown. So Buenos Aires and Argentina is in a complete lockdown. So it is mandatory. You cannot go out, only for food or for if you need some medicines to the pharmacy, and that's it. And we are confined, we are in isolation. We are very lucky that we psychoanalysts can work we can help other people, our patients, and beyond the couch, as the title of your podcast series. But we are in a full lockdown, unable to go outside. And this is mandatory because there was a law. And if you break the rule, you can, be in detention, or you can, maybe, if not, you will have to pay a very expensive fine.
So people are not allowed to jog or walk or exercise outside at all, really?
Nothing. You can do nothing of this. So this is what we miss, and we are in a kind of surreal situation. But, the government started with this measures, very drastic measures, because you can imagine that if resources are not enough in wealthy places of the world, so here they won't be enough. So we are conscious, we are, Latin Americans, and we like to kiss each other, to hug each other, to go out, and it's still summer. So it became colder now, and this is threatening because we know that the COVID likes, cold weather. So this is, Buenos Aires is like this. If you go outside, and I don't go out, and I have some help from my son who brings some food, and this is the way, and there is a, you can order food or some other things on the online or on the phone. But if you go outside, the first day I went downstairs just only to get what my son was bringing to us, I start, weeping because it's a desert, the city. So this is the way we are living our lives today, and I personally and many people agree, and there is a strong campaign on the media, stay at home. I myself posted on my Facebook page a picture, maybe this is the one I sent to you. Stay at home, we are working from home.
And we are lucky like that.
We are lucky.
And the analytic community, what was the transition like from regular in-office practice to the online world we're all living in now?
I feel what I can tell you is my personal experience and then from an institutional point of view. I personally switched my practice since the 2 days before the lockdown, the official lockdown. And it wasn't easy. I am not saying that I don't work online. I have some, patients with whom I work, but these patients are mostly, patients that I had in analysis here in my office, so I know them. There are some exceptions, but mainly this way. But the most of my time I work here in my office, where I'm now lucky to be now, because we live in a duplex apartment, so one floor is our house and the other floor is my husband is also a psychoanalyst. We have our offices, so we are lucky that it was not mandatory to leave our offices. So there is something that we are lucky. From my personal point of view, it wasn't easy and it's still difficult. Not difficult. I switched all my practice and all my practice, clinical and supervision and some teaching, because I'm not teaching for the last 4 or 5 years. Because of the position I have, I don't have enough time to do all what I like to do, everything I like to do. So, it's more tiring. This is my personal experience, and this is something that my colleagues also say.
All around the world,
it's tiring. And I personally give, the possibility to my patients to make their decision if they prefer the telephone, WhatsApp with no video, with video. So I started, organizing a list. And now, it became more comfortable. But I have to say that it is tiring and there is a lack of the presence of both the patient and the analyst.
Has there been much communication among analysts in Buenos Aires about what's going on?
Yes. The associations, we have 3 associations in Buenos Aires, and they started, because I'm not part of any committee because sure. of my role in the IPA, but they started to try to adapt all the teaching of the institute. And my institute, USAM, it means that my association, the one I belong to, the Buenos Aires Psychoanalytic Association, the institute is an universitary institute. I think it's one.
It's affiliated with a university?
It is an university. It became an university. Yes. We are waiting for the final approval, but it is an universitary institute. So it wasn't easy, but the institute adapted the teaching to an online teaching, the association as well. So all the associations in Buenos Aires and in Argentina, we have 3 associations and 1 study group in the interior, Córdoba, Mendoza, Rosario, and a study group in San Luis. They started offering online, possibilities, not to, I don't know if for analysis, psychotherapy, or whatever. It's a kind of hotline, So, and for free. So we are working, and the associations are working, very hardly to keep our members connected, our candidates. In Latin America, we don't name the candidates as candidates. We say analysts in training. So I have to translate it into English.
Okay. And you, there's a community you've been, is it there like a listserv you have, or is it, how do you communicate with each other?
We communicate, yes. Maybe there is a listserv, but I don't know. There's no listserv. There are different forums. Uh-huh. There are scientific meetings. You know, every Tuesday we meet. I'm speaking about my association, but the other two the same. On Tuesday morning, they are devoted to scientific meetings, and they organized them in a very good way by Zoom. The last scientific meeting in my association, last week, we had 100 attendees. So, yes, it's amazing. And there are some other activities, there are courses, and there are, you know, as it is an university institute, they have master's degree courses, and they started maybe 1 or 2 weeks later, but they are working a lot.
Very exciting. I hadn't known that. Mm-hmm. Virginia, let's talk clinical work. The transition, you said, was challenging, as it is for all of us. And your approach, if I heard you correctly, is to offer people a choice between audio and visual. Have you noticed any themes that certain types of patients, analytic patients versus psychotherapy patients, or particular phases of treatment that people are in, prefer one approach or another? Or do you have a preference for one approach or another?
I have a preference. I like to work on Zoom. And I like to work on Zoom because I think, and I was, there is an advice, I don't know what happened during the last days because it was updated, but I think it is easy when you learn how to work with it. It's easy. You can have recurrent meetings, so you don't have every time to remind that this is the hour of the session. And I feel that it's better to be organized because I work a lot. I used to work a lot, and I'm still working. So, you know, I think there are different situations regarding different personalities. And, you know, I think that the age is one factor. To my surprise, I still work with children, and they entered in this, you know, remote way so easily. And they, now I have, you know, I'm not going to focus on any of my patients, but, you know, they are digital natives, so it's very easy for them to enter into the work with using technology. You know, and we have patients that they said that they prefer to wait until this crisis comes to an end. Only a few. The others are doing their best. And it's not easy for, you know, everybody, because we are all in lockdown. So young mothers have their husbands and children at home. So to find a space of privacy and intimacy is not easy. So I had to adjust to different situations. But I think that, you know, I thought that I wasn't going to work, but I work a lot. And I even had new consultations. It's amazing.
Yes, I had the experience of starting to see a new patient. Yeah. And our only contact, and it was once a week psychotherapy, but our only contact was through online visual. It was a different experience. Do you find that the visual augments or makes more challenging your own free associative process in your mind?
I think that it's challenging. You know, I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine, and he told me something that could be useful, that there is a platform, I'm not working with that platform, Doxy.
Yes.
That you can... And this is interesting. I think that I will try, because you can, what the advantage he sees in that you can turn out your camera without losing the call. Do you understand what I mean?
Sure, you just shut off the visual. Yes.
Yes.
People do that, right.
But in Zoom, I didn't find a way to do that. So I think that we have to take into account that it's not only that you can see your patient and you can see yourself. This is quite strange.
Right. Yes, it is. Very distracting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The analytic patients, we prefer not to see each other. So we use maybe the telephone or the video, not the video, exactly the opposite, only the call on the cell phone with no image. You know, I think now that I'm talking with you about this, we are discussing this, this is also tiring to switch from one way to the other. We are used to have a regular meeting with our patients only one way.
Sure.
In person.
Sure. My experience is that the absence of the physical presence of the person is part of what's draining, that there's a natural buoyancy when you're in physical relation with someone. There's a libido that exists in both directions. And we have to work harder when we're relying on, digital connections, because it's missing that aliveness. It's missing that vibrancy that I find sustaining in many hours of work.
I agree with you. This is something that French analysts usually say, and they write about, the physical contact, the presence of the body. I think that they are right. Now, there's no way, make a choice. So we have to do our best with what we have, because we are going through a very, very serious, not only a health crisis, I think this is a humanitarian crisis. So we have to do what we can. I don't like to mention, to quote Bion, because it could be misunderstood when he wrote that wonderful article, Making the Best of a Bad Job. It's not a bad job to work on online, I don't think so. But what he meant is that we have to try to do our best, our best. Regarding our own defenses, this is a point that I would like to underline. We have to work with the patient, but in the same way with ourselves, with our countertransference, what we miss, our own feelings, our own anxieties. And I think that more than ever, because we are all in the same boat.
That's another unique aspect of this crisis. We're all in danger, and we both know it, and we obviously have to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
While not losing our position of focusing on the inner life of the patient, we have to also acknowledge that our inner lives are under threat as well.
Yes, and this is that's why I said we are all in the same boat, because it is very interesting how things that you've learned long time ago come back. A very, very distinguished analyst, she is French, but she came to Argentina when she was a little girl, Jeanine Puget. She wrote a paper, I think that there is a translation into English, I will find out, about, two worlds juxtaposed. I don't know how to say, mundos superpuestos. So I might have said this, I was trained and I was raised in a psychoanalytic way in the Kleinian tradition.
Yes.
So you know that inner world, the inner world, internal reality prevails. But we have learned, that you have to take into account the external world.
We've learned from life.
We learn from life, yes. Yeah. And this is what is happening now. We are challenged by a very serious situation, both.
Speaking of the outer world, to draw our attention to the IPA. You are, of course, the president of the IPA, and that brings with it the enormity of the work that you do, and also the challenges to sort of hold up the IPA. I'm actually, as I say this, I'm making a gesture with my hands, picturing you holding up the metaphoric IPA. What is that like for you? And then we can talk about some of the practical aspects of it.
I think that, you know, it's very important what you say to keep our membership together. And we are, you know, working a lot, and you are part, an important part of our effort, because you created the listserv on COVID. How do you, I don't remember now the name of the listserv.
The IPA in health crisis, I think. Yes. Anybody who's interested, who's not on it, can write me and I'll help you get on it. It's a terrific listserv.
It's an amazing amount of work. Harvey, I have to thank you in a way. It's publicly. I'm very grateful.
You're very kind. Yes.
No, because this is one of the devices or the places where people can go and exchange their, and it's amazing. Sometimes it's quite moving. I don't have enough time to post, but every day I read and I want to write something, and I have many things on my plate now. But
I know you do. Yes,
we also developed a website section. It's called Stay Connected COVID-19 something. It's a red banner, and it's accessible for not only for IPA members, for everybody. So you can. Every person who is interested, they can go there, and there are videos, articles that are for help, great help now.
And you want to mention the title of the website?
Yes,
so stay
connected. Stay connected. It's a red banner.
Okay.
You open the IPA website, ipa.world.
World, right?
And then you have the red banner, because it's a hot situation. Red banner, and you get there, and you or everybody can find many resources, videos, guidelines, and articles. Very interesting articles. And we also, I'm going into the practical details, and then I will go back to your questions.
Okay, sure.
So I'm now aware that we developed the webinars that we used to have, but now there are special webinars devoted to COVID and the pandemic. There was one in English, the first one. I was the moderator, and I invited a Chinese psychoanalyst, an Italian psychoanalyst, the Italian Yang Yuping, and an Italian analyst, you know, Stefano Bolognini, was the former president, and an American analyst, Gilbert Kliman, and it was, and I moderated, and you know, we had 2,700 attendees, and the capacity was 1,000, so.
That's
terrific. And the second one was in Spanish, one last Friday. It was moderated by Sergio Nick, the vice president from Brazil, and Luis Martin Cabré from Spain, Margarita Cerejido from Washington, D.C., and now I don't remember Luis Martin. Ah, Claudio Eiserich, a former IPA president and the chair of new groups. So, we are doing our best. This is what I wanted to convey. We are doing our best, all of us, to keep our membership connected and to feel that we are together in going through these terrible times.
Virginia, you are working so hard and contributing so much and have so much responsibility on your plate. not to mention your own worries. You are in the age bracket that's at risk. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What keeps you going? What sustains you in this time?
This is a very good question. I think that I will go back to my Kleinian origins because these are my roots. I think that what keeps me sustained and, you know, moving on, even if I'm tired, I'm feeling happy to be able to contribute in some way to this terrible, as I said, humanitarian crisis. And it has to do with my internal objects, and that has the whole history of my relationship with psychoanalysis that started, as I told you, in my first podcast when I was an adolescent. And I think that what I wrote many years ago, a paper on the analytic attitude, I think that when you have the analytic training, the analytic attitude is internalized. And you need, of course, you need to feed the analytic attitude and you need to keep it. And you have to be aware when you lose it, because you will have a sign from your countertransference. But I think that this is the motivation and the passion for psychoanalysis. I must say that I love my work and I feel lucky that I'm able to work even during this crisis. And not because I'm a good person, but because I trust the psychoanalysis. And when I wrote that paper, I said that analytic attitude, this has, you know, some factors. It contains, you know, neutrality, the rule of abstinence, but mainly your receptivity, your capacity to observe, your capacity to think before acting. And I think that this is what keeps me working and feeling not so pessimistic, even if these are very dark times. Mm.
And I would underline as well, knowing you over this period of time, your passion for the work and your passion for reaching out to people in the special way that you do comes across in almost every encounter that we've had. And I would count that as one of the things that sustains you.
Thank you. Thank you, Harvey. Yes, I think that, yes, it's the passion for the work we do that was transmitted by our teachers, our analysts, and the pioneers of psychoanalysis. And as I'm a child analyst as well, this keeps me, I'm not working, you know, as much as I used to work with kids, but this keeps me in a way alert to the contemporary world and what's going on. And when you see, this is my clinical work, a young boy or a young girl who has a motivation to be in analysis, even during these times, I think that this is the best thing you can do. Sure. I would like to also to underline the work, because we have started a huge organization inside the organization, and it's the name is IPA in the community, and you are the chair of IPA in health, and we are working in different fields, education, violence, climate change, everything. So I think this is the opportunity for us psychoanalysts to be present in the community, even if remotely.
Virginia, I want to thank you for revisiting us again. I would like us to make a promise to each other that we do another conversation when we're looking back at this period of time. Hopefully, to your comment about having pleasure, when we can have pleasure with no inhibitions, no sorrows, no no hesitations to embrace the pleasure of our working together, of our working, our reaching out in a world that's not so frightened.
Thank you. I hope that we could do, I don't think it will be very soon. This is my feeling, but I hope and I think that it will come the time when we could even see each other.
That would be lovely.
Yes.
And we could give one of those Latin embraces and kisses.
Yes, I know that you allow me. Yes.
So yes, with great pleasure. Yes. Thank you again, Virginia. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.